Here we go.
They call themselves the
Heroes Asylum.
Uno, morons.
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum. We've stopped numbering them. I guess maybe I need to start going back and looking at the numbers.
Maybe. We'll just keep going.
Didn't
we do that once? That
we used to keep track of the numbers, and it became a joke because I used to forget what episode we were on because we were in the triple digits, and I started forgetting, and I had to look them up before the show. But so here we are on the revised version 2.0 of Heroes Asylum. It's Mike and Jeff, so we're gonna
like the Hardy Boys. Back, man.
We're back, exactly. We all started this kind of because of Daredevil. We had our first show back talking about Daredevil and about like comebacks and redemptions and things of that nature. So every week we've done a theme in that. And this week we're going back home. We're going back to our roots.
The roots.
We're going back to redemptions in comic books or, rebirths or, just something that brought a character back or a story arc. Or something throughout our history. And again, like I said,
I think we're gonna do characters, but I think after the conversation I had with you, it's a bit more ambiguous, and I think this is the better route to go with, because they both kind of like a character's arc that does have redemption will lead to one of the arcs, and actually putting that character back on the map. But either way, it works. So you want to go first? You want me to go?
You know what? I will go first. Actually,
okay.
And I want to, this is a massive one. This character used to be one of the biggest villains, to this team of all time. And eventually he became one of their biggest mentors, Magneto.
Oh.
With Magneto, his lifelong friend of Charles Xavier, them going back and forth with this constant battling, back and forth, and it's one of the most interesting stories to see that these two and what their stories mean. I've been recently watching I wish I could remember her name now. She does a lot of watch alongs on TikTok, like the short ones, like 3 minutes, and she kind of goes through the whole movie. And she's now just recently delved into the X-Men. She was all MCU, and she's recently just delved into like doing like the Netflix MCU, and then she's jumped into the Marvel. And just like watching her excitement about their growth, like how close they were. And then what broke them apart, and then kind of why they were the way they were in the original three trilogies,
Mm-hmm.
Xavier passed away. Magneto took over the X-Mansion, and he actually started the New Mutants. So he became a massive, because that's kind of when I think I jumped in. I was like, who's this guy? What's he doing? And then when I delve backwards, I was like, holy crap, why is he here? What is he? I mean, because he was the antagonist to them all, through everything they tried to do, it was him and his Brotherhood of Mutants. So, and I think
he started the Hellfire Club too, didn't he? Was that his?
That one I don't remember with the Hellfire Club. I thought they were already kind of, I thought that was more Emma Frost. I started reading it, the Hellfire Club was kind of already there, so I didn't look into their. Or,
I didn't know he was New Mutants, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, you got to realize when the run that he came into, he was part of. Yeah, he was the New Mutants teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that makes sense.
And again, like I said, just a great redemption story from basically being the Luther to their X-Men. That he was just constantly their antagonist, and then eventually he and Charles were very similar. It's something I guess I used to say to a friend of ours, Steve. It was like I've always told him, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And it kind of, I think that's with Magneto and Charles, it was that way. It was how Magneto went about it. They were trying to do the same thing, just went about it in
two totally different ways. One was more of the peaceful route, and Magneto was more, by force. I mean, other comics he kind of changed. They've actually done them pretty well. The last couple iterations, you've seen him in the comics. I think you read a run where you were saying that I think it was one of the newer ones that you were reading a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the one with the one that came out. I think it was 2019, 2020.
Yeah, that's the one.
Where basically, I mean, it was a revamp of the whole X-Men universe and Charles and again that one that right there, you want to talk about a redemption arc. That X-Men was a redemption arc in a way that it rebirthed the X-Men. It brought them back in. They were always there, but it wasn't until that moment that it sort of gave a rebirth to the X-Men comics that people got interested in what they were doing again. Same thing happened in the 70s. 70s kind of was bad, the 80s, and then you had that giant X-Men number one that came out and like it redefined what they were. This did the same thing.
Magneto's backstory, did they not? Like his backstory was.
No, the backstories weren't that far off. Like they all were pretty much like their origin stories were all pretty much the same, but they joined together. They had an island where the mutants were welcome and they were trying to bring them in. Jean, Cyclops, and Wolverine were in a truple or thruple relationship. Oh, they all lived together on the moon. The Star Jammers were coming and visiting them, but they lived in this compound on the moon, and they had like their little pods, and they were all three knew that they were in a relationship together. So yeah, it was an interesting take. It was a fresher take than I've seen in a long time. And just the idea of, you know, the X-Men went out and did experiences, and if they died, Charles was able to save their consciousness, and they were able to grow a new body, so they continued on with the knowledge of what happened before him. Really interesting run. I kept telling you about you. I was like, yeah. They've got him out there. I think it's a House of X series, if you want to look that up.
Definitely gonna check that out. And I think for future installments of the MCU, as we're doing this, you know, the X-Men are coming back, which I think we both love. And I think going forward, because I think with this run for the X-Men coming in the MCU now through Doomsday and Secret Wars, I think that's gonna be the ending of that X-Men iteration. That's the ones that began in Fox.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I hope
going forward they use that run that you read for the MCU X-Men, because it's a little more modernized. It's a little bit different than the Fox universe. And I hope they can do that to revitalize the X-Men their own.
That would be interesting, because Xavier didn't have Cerebro. He had a Cerebro helmet
on his head, and he was walking.
So, yeah, it was interesting. And that's what drew me to that, was like, why is he wearing this skin-tight outfit with a fucking bobblehead on his
head? it was a little jarring at first. Yeah, I think that was the thing that kind of threw me off. I'm like, what is it? Who is that? Because I thought it was Cerebro. And like, no, that's Charles Xavier with Cerebro on his head. Okay. And he's walking around. And okay.
So
I guess.
What do you got?
I got a character that was really dead for a long, long time. And they brought him back in the weirdest way. But when they brought him back, they brought another character back along with him and probably began one of the best DC comic runs probably of all time. That's Blackest Night, by bringing back the Black Hand. The Black Hand, a lame-o character for the 60s. I think he was introduced in one of the Lantern comic books. He was not that powerful. He's actually kind of lame. But if you read Blackest Night, he gets in there, steals the power of all the rings, and there's Necron involved. Basically, the Justice League dies. He brings him back to life with these dead rings. Probably one of the best arcs of all time in DC. And I think I've talked to you about this, and we disagree on it. But, you know, it is what it is. I think James Gunn is going to do Blackest Night. I don't know why I have that feeling, but especially with this Lantern thing, investigation leading to something bigger, I think it's Blackest Night. But
you just described every Green Lantern comic book, just so you know. I just think there's too much to get involved with the Blackest Night, you know, especially when you have so many great stories before that to tell, before you get to that point.
Sprinkle a little bit, and I can intro Necron and etc. But like, yeah, that was one of my favorite ones, and I don't think I hope he does it, but I'm just wondering about this Lantern series if it's gonna set that up, because he said something about it, and I was like, that kind of piqued my interest. That's one of the reasons. Like, is he gonna go here? I mean, it's a world already established with the Justice League, so they've had it been together for a while, so you can do stories like that.
True, yeah. Again, like he's at the infancy, like going that far in. I mean, there's a lot of great stories I'd love for them to tell. DC has bad reputation, and yeah, they just James Gunn needs to play it safe. That's why I'm glad Peter's with him, because I know James Unleashed will go too far, I think. And I think with Peter being there as like the co-directors or co-writers of the overall DCU, I think that it will be better with Gunn reined in, because Gunn can push it, and I love some of the things that he does, and some of the I think he digs deeper into like the toy box of the comic book characters than we used to give Feige credit for. I think James goes.
Oh yeah, he goes way deep. I mean,
and that's why I think Peter needs to be the one to pull him out of the toy box. Okay, you got a couple of good ones. Come back. Don't go too far into that.
You're not using Polka Dot Man again. We let you get away with
yeah,
first.
Exactly.
Polka
yeah.
Dot Man was kind of cool. That Suicide Squad movie.
Polka Dot Man and Starro. I mean, to fucking throw Starro in, which I mean, that's more to me in my head. That's more DC than the Suicide Squad. But just to have Starro there was just awesome.
That was wild. I never thought I'd see the day you see a freaking movie with Starro in it. I'm like, what? Really? Damn, James. He goes, like you said, he goes for those deep cut, like DC figures, like Javelin, and what was that one girl in the Suicide Squad movie? She was painted orange. She was like Mongol sister.
Oh, Mongal.
Mongal, yeah, just weirdo characters that I thought I'd never see. I mean, shit, he made Peacemaker or something. That's something to say in itself.
Yeah.
But definitely the Black Hand. Check out the run if you haven't checked out Blackest Night. It's a really cool run. And lots of dead people rising from the dead.
Yes. I'm gonna jump into DC as well. Again, I'm trying to balance the love here. Jeff and I are big DC fans, but I did put my toes into Marvel for a while. But I am going back into the DC character toy box. This is an environmental character.
Ooh.
Pamela Isley. The redemption story of her from going to wanting to destroy, create weapons and plants just to destroy humanity on just like an epic scale. You know, she got like crazy genocidal in some of the Batman books. But I feel her redemption story, and it's one of the oddest redemption stories, and it's basically turned into a great show. Was her relationship with Harley Quinn.
Oh, yeah. That show's real.
I mean, if anybody's never watched Harley Quinn on HBO Max, please do yourself a favor. It's great. Voice actors are awesome. You've got Alan Tudyk, who's... I think he does, like, five of the characters. You've got Kaylee Cuoco from Big Bang Theory. She does Harley's voice. I mean, just an amazing cast. But the story that they tell...
It's so good, and it's so funny. I love that.
I mean, just because they're both villains, but when they get together and they soften each other up in a way, and she changes from a woman who's wanting to destroy humanity to sort of appreciating it, and she sort of starts turning into a bit of a hero. You know, in a way. Yeah. I mean, there's just certain parts of her that like, okay, she's very. The term's always been the anti-hero, but like Venom, you know, Venom's the anti-hero. He's never really bad. He's just doing what he does. And I think that's kind of with Poison Ivy. And like I said, just a great arc when you look at the books and then you look at what she's done further on and then the show, just a great turnaround. Because if you tell anybody, you know, that's maybe watching the show and hasn't really gone into the books, what she was and how fucking psychotic she was. even Swamp Thing's like, hey, hold up. He's like,
yeah,
I like the green, but hold up.
Yeah, she's a bit genocidal. Yeah, the green. Like, whoa.
And we're not talking. What is it? Is that Batman Forever, or which one is that?
Oh, is it Batman and Robin?
Is it Batman with Robin where Uma Thurman plays her? Yeah, it's not that one, guys. I mean, she is sort of that nutty one. She's sort of like that character. I think that was probably the best representation of any Batman villain on that in that movie was her.
I'll give it that. She was probably the best part of that movie. I mean, there was not a lot of good things in that movie, but she probably was the best part. And the animated series one was kind of good too. I like the way they did her there. And Gotham, they did a couple iterations of Poison Ivy.
Yeah,
and
I did like her. Yeah, because she was younger, wasn't she?
Yeah, she had like, it's weird because I guess they kind of based it on the plant life thing. She had like three forms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she died, right. Came back looking, and they kind of like could justify why she looked different.
Yeah, because they aged her up pretty quick. Because I remember that, like one season she was like in her teens, and then the next she's like in her 20s or something like that. And
then like a third version, she was like older in her 30s. I was like, okay, we're going quick here. Like, but the way they kind of described it was interesting, and it kind of like alluded to her, you know, her origin being a psycho plant lady that she is. Oh, I guess I go. Yes. So I collect McFarlane figures, as you know, lots of them.
You do?
But really? Also, I guess a little bit. Yeah, some people might say too much. But Day, what are you going to do? So I used to read Spawn comics back in the day. And for me, Spawn kind of fell off like mid-90s. Like the first couple 25 issues are pretty good. After I kind of went to a lull, got a little weird. Even for my taste, it got a little weird. Then they released a comic called Spawn Armageddon. Are you familiar with Spawn Armageddon?
Yeah.
Okay. And if you guys haven't read Spawn Armageddon, I think I talked about it on the old show years ago. But basically, it brought back Spawn into the light. And I'll give you a little synopsis of what it is. Basically, Spawn is battling God and Satan. There's this entity that basically makes God and Satan into to the kids of Terry's ex-wife, and they're going after Spawn. These two little kids just creating destruction. Spawn has to stop them, and of course he can't really kill him because those are his kids of his ex-wife, which happens to be she was married to his best friend. It gets weird. It's really weird, but check it out. And to me, it kind of brought Spawn back. The ending is really good with Spawn too. He becomes sort of like an angel, and he's like omnipresent, so he's no longer tied to hell anymore. So it's a really good storyline and a really good comeback for Spawn. Kind of brought him back to that forefront. Like, okay, Spawn's cool again. Because after a while, they kind of like, yeah, they dropped the ball on him. But in this one, they kind of humanized him a little bit, which jumps back onto your Poison Ivy thing. It's kind of like Harley and Ivy are together and they kind of humanize each other. Well, this comic with Spawn kind of humanized him in a way that wasn't done before. So if you haven't, check that one out. Spawn, I'm going to get on.
All right, I'm going to do something.
I'm afraid.
I'm doing two back-to-back. Sorry, I got to step on you. They're tied together. So I have to sort of put them together. So if anybody was around during the 90s, if anybody's done any, like, history or, you know, have read The Death and Return of Superman. I mean, probably one of the most iconic things that happened to Superman in probably a long time, but also probably one of the biggest things that turned comic books on its head during the 90s, and we got more of an edgier tone to comics around everything. I mean, yes, Spawn and Image Comics coming into the light, and we had a whole bunch of different other books that were out there, and you had Milestone, and, you know, like I said, Image, and you just had so many great like underground comic books coming up. I think DC had to make a choice, and if you've watched any documentaries about it, they literally was a joke that Kill Superman was always every year, what are we doing? What are we killings. Just kill him. Finally, it was like, well, crap, we have no other option. So they took the steps, killed Superman off, and probably that's what got me back into comics in my teens. I had kind of faded away a little bit, and that's what drug me right back to the point I literally got ink on my arm of the, or I had ink on my arm of the original bloody Superman emblem.
I don't think you're the only one that comic that was basically, I was still like you said, I was still kind of collecting fairly, but once that comic came out, I mean, there was lines at the comic book store to get this comic because it was all over the news too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, big news. Yeah.
And they would show that iconic cover with the blood dripping down. Yeah, just and a good book too. Just like people say what it is like the imagery is so shocking. I mean, people will always like look at that image, like the bloody icon, or basically Lois holding him, the broken cape waving in the wind. as you know, after
that's probably one of the most iconic images I can remember.
I've been looking for a poster of that for so long because I just like the image of it. Not that I'm a destructive person.
Yes, you are.
Per se.
It's okay.
But embrace I just like the image of that.
But one of the things I love about that comic book and that imagery you just talked about, I don't know if you've heard the story, but when Henry Cavill was being cast for the Man of Steel, DC and Warner Brothers is like, no, man, we gotta get you shaved down. Superman doesn't have a hairy chest. And that's what he brought out. He goes, the most classic imagery of Superman, when you see him, there's suit's ripped, Lois has got him in his arms, all you see is just this massive hairy chest. And he's like, no, right there. In the most iconic image of Superman, you know, in decades, there it is. I'm keeping my hair. I love that for the fact that we, you know, Henry is a sweaty. We've all heard of how he is. But I love the fact that he's like, no, right there in the book. Suck it.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong at all. You know, I just kind of wish he had his moment as Superman, but that's another story.
He did.
But
it's like, called Man of Steel. He had his moment. That's another show. Well, you and I have our discussions on that one. But like I was saying, the death and return of Superman, iconic. We get the four Supermen that come back to replace him. They're each different parts of him in a way. And then we get his rebirth, which is like, you know, this is the redemption for him, where he comes back. Something that you probably love the most, but one of the second images of Superman that you love the most is that black and white suit.
Oh yeah, that black and white suit and, with
and
the mullet.
The mullet, exactly. So
the mullet.
So we get that rebirth of Superman coming back, and during this time, this is where I'm going to take my second one. During this time, we find out during that story that Mongol, you mentioned him earlier, you had Mongol and you had the cyborg Superman, one of the four that came back, were actually working together. This is part of like destroying the Earth. They want to make it a war world. That is their plan. And the first city that they decide to go after, Coast City, Green Lantern's home, and they annihilate it, wipe it off the Earth, gone. Hal loses it so hard, he literally creates the city again using his power ring. And he like literally recreates the buildings, the people, everybody's in green. And he just gets so angry and so mad about everything that he stops what he's doing. And he's so angry at the Guardians for letting something like this happen. And he goes gunning straight for them. And the Guardians are so scared and are on the last, like, they're like, what can we do? He is just wiping out people left and right coming towards us to the point where they have to release the worst thing ever. They release Sinestro onto Hal Jordan to try to stop him. But Hal's just one-minded. And then, of course, we get the creation of Parallax.
Parallax, yeah.
Who, like, becomes, I think, Zero Hour was what was, like, his biggest part. But he just becomes this beast of a villain and just starts destroying everybody.
I think there was a Green Lantern animated movie a couple of years ago. It was part of the old DC that just ended the universe. I think it was with Jon Stewart, where they had their version of Parallax in there.
Yeah, and that's basically what he was. I mean, they did.
But that's a great dude. That is a nice little tie-in you did there.
But then we eventually do get the redemption of Hal Jordan. You know, he goes from bad to good, and he actually sacrifices himself to save basically the world. And that's when we get, I think it's Emerald Twilight, I believe, was the run where he basically, you know, saves everybody and is reborn into one of my favorite characters, the Spectre. So, and again, this is, we're talking about a, you know, 5-year run almost, maybe a little bit more than that for that story arc, but it starts with the death of Superman, his redemption, and come back in the fall of Hal. One of the biggest falls, I mean, that one like imprinted on me, honestly, more than Superman. Like that really, like, man, his pain was there.
Yeah, his pain led him to horrible things. that's no worse pain than that, than the death of your family or your whole city just it'd be destroyed in front of you. And then
I think one of the biggest images is him on his knees, you know, yelling up at the sky. You know, it's just like it was deep. And then, you know, like what he ends up doing, you're like, I get you, man. I get you. You're going the wrong way, but I get you.
What a nice little run, too. Wish I would have thought of that. Oh, wait, I did. Because I'm going to go back to back, too. And it is a comic run from Marvel. And it actually, this run built the first part of the MCU, phases 1-4. And that book is called Thanos' Quest. That's right. Thanos' Quest. Now, basically, when they made Thanos in the beginning, he was kind of, he was a goofball. He had a Thanos copter. Remember that, Mike? The Thanos copter looked stupid and all that?
Yeah.
So then they brought Jim Starlin, brought him back. And he's like, okay, I'm going to bring, you know, this guy back. And they're like, why? They brought him back. And basically, that's where we get the Thanos' Quest, where he's basically challenging the elders of the MCU universe at the time. And he's hunting for gems. And those gems lead to the very next one, which is the Infinity Gauntlet. And both of these stories go hand in hand. Thanos with the search for the gems, and then eventually into the Infinity Gauntlet. And if you've watched the MCU, basically that's almost how like it was, but a little bit different in the comics. Adam Warlock was involved a little bit more. Gamora was involved a little bit more. But it's that chase for the Infinity Gauntlet that has everybody going. Like I said, you've probably seen it in the MCU. They borrowed some hints of it. But basically rebuilt Thanos from the Thanos copter, stupid wielding fool that he was, into the big badass that he eventually became in this comic run. Not in the animated series, he was terrible. Ugh. But the MCU, he was great, voiced by James Brolin. Check those two out. Thanos' Quest to Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, that one's actually, and I think I guess this is me deep down. I think the comic book reasoning was better than the movie reasoning. He did everything for love in the comics because he loved death, like the physical incarnation of death, this woman, and he did it to get her attention. But you know, MCU is like, oh, he just wants to wipe out half the world for you know, resources, you know, so there's more resources for everybody. I was like,
he's a capitalist.
I like the love part. Like, he's in love with death so much that I'm going to show you what I can do.
I don't think they couldn't sell that. They were like, you know, he's going to fall in love with, like, just death. Like, that's it.
And again, that would have been a darker twist, though. That run with both those were really good. Those are ones I've gone back to read. I wasn't reading at the time, but, yeah.
I remember before I started collecting comics, there's a local library over here. Yes, I still have a library card.
So do I.
And I would go there. So let's get a library card. And I would go in there, and I would rent the two hardcovers of this, which was Thanos' Victory and Unlaunched Infinity Gauntlet and Infinity War, which was actually the third one. But great runs and basically built Thanos into what he is today. You know, nobody knew who Thanos was or is. And, you know, like I said, Kevin Feige and all those guys, they borrowed a lot of stuff from those two runs into Thanos. I think they made Thanos a little better, but hey.
Yeah, I think it's so funny that when you hear, like, the comic book sweaty is getting mad. Oh, this isn't what happened. This isn't how they are. And I'm like, do you? Nothing. None of this is how it is. This is like an adaptation of it. And it's a mix of the normal Marvel universe and a mix of the Ultimate universe. And like, it's just this amalgamation of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I didn't hear anybody complaining about Thanos doing what he did.
Nope.
So I'm like, so stop bitching. Just stop. Just enjoy the ride.
Just enjoy your getting it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we just watch the movies that we watched when we were growing up. They were not these. Garbage. Straight to DVD.
Hey, Condor Man was fucking awesome. Don't say anything.
Condor Man.
Come on, Condor Man. If anybody's look up Condor Man, it's a Disney movie, but it is the Oreo. It's like the mid-80s like superhero.
Yeah, it's definitely of its time.
Yeah. But it's so good, so good.
Oh, God. I'm a bigger fan of the Phantom and the Shadow. Those are my favorites.
I watched the Phantom not that long ago. I actually downloaded the original newspaper runs. I found a place I could get them to where I can see them digitally. The actual like comic strip, not the comic books, but the old comic strip runs of the Phantom. And I there's a series of Phantom books out there I want to get. I think it's like five or six books based off the Phantom, and it was what was really the comic book or the comic strip and the books were kind of like together. So, but because I used to be a big, and that's, I got a question for you. Sure. This is one of those Mandela effect things that I'm just like, my brain is hurting. I remember a Phantom cartoon, not Defenders.
No.
But a straight up Phantom cartoon.
Yeah.
But it was just him and that's it. I can't find it anywhere. I can't even find a mention of it online.
Really? Because it was on ABC. I remember that. It was on ABC. Because I saw it. And he was on an island. Basically, he was just doing the same thing he did in the movie. He was like fighting for his island or something. And he had the animals that were sidekicks. But I remember that show very fondly because I used to watch
it. So do I. But I cannot find mention of it anywhere, any place I could go watch it. Nothing. The only thing I can find is what the Defenders of the Universe or Defenders of Earth, where it was him and
it was a weird Flash line.
Gordon and like a whole bunch of that's the only thing I could find. But when I'm watching it, I'm like, this is the one. This design and the voice actor sounds just like what I remember from that show. Yeah, and it's just driving me up the wall. I'm like, man, am I losing it? That's what I'm thinking. It's got to be Mandela effect. So you are helping me out then. Thank you.
Yeah, I got it.
Thank you. I'm hitting that age where like, do I remember it or just was I just having a good imagination as a child and I wanted that to happen?
I am of that age.
Okay,
too,
so perfect.
I know that comic and or that show very well. There was a couple other ones afterwards that kind of wonder where they went. But
yeah, like I said, I can pretty much find anything. I can find mention of it or find it online, be able to stream it someplace. But that one, like I said, even when I go to Wikipedia and I go to Wikipedia's like listing and you go to like other media, there's no mention of it in there. And I'm like, it's just like, wait a second.
That is really strange.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So were those your two that you had there?
Yeah, those were two.
Okay, perfect. All right. So I have, and I guess these are sort of two, but they're linked together. So I'm not going to count them as two. But the redemption story, and we get this in the MCU, the redemption story of the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Oh.
When you think back to the movies, I'm not counting it. I'm not counting the streaming service or the streaming series. But when you look at Wanda and her brother, and you see how they were, Pietro and Wanda, you see how they were when they first started. They were against the Avengers. But in the comics, they were against the X-Men. In fact, they were first year run of the X-Men. But Wanda and her brother, Pietro, and they were part of their father's Magneto, Brotherhood of Mutants. So they, you know, obviously Kevin shook him up and said, okay, Magneto's not here, but we're going to have these two be here. And they were antagonists to the X-Men through quite a bit. And then they sort of like vanished and went AWOL for a while. You didn't hear from them. And like their next appearance was in like Captain America's second generation of the Avengers. And so like then that's when you're getting where Feige kind of got that. But when they were there, there was like amendments to their past deeds, and there was a little bit of renconning their stuff, but they became members of the Avengers eventually. And when you, like I said, when you sit down and you look at their arc of what they began and who, well, Magneto, you know, being their father and just being as powerful, not just in his abilities, but the presence of Magneto, they were just like overtaken by him. It's something that I wish, and I wonder if we'll get it down the road. I mean, it's interesting to see what direction they're going. Obviously, the new announcements of casting for Doomsday, we did not see any mention of Olsen. So obviously, she's not there. She's dead, and I'm putting up quotes, folks, because we know the rules about death in the comics. I'm sure she's going to come back. I would love a moment of her and like Magneto or whoever they get, maybe not to be a father. I mean, I would love to see that dynamic, but you know, you remind me of somebody. You know?
Well, I mean, and I hope they do get it. They got Ian McKellen back, and I think they interviewed Elizabeth Olsen a while ago, and they asked, you know, which Magneto would you want to do a scene with, Fassbender or McKellen? And she said McKellen. And so I'm wondering.
Again, Dave, the MCU's mentioned that there's more to come, and I'm sure, again, they don't announce everybody. They do have their cameos, their surprise, you know, characters that will pop up. So
I'm sure she's one of these two.
I would hope so. Maybe, again, like I said, I mean, and it's another thing you and I talked about this week is, you know, they announcing Channing Tatum coming back. I was like, we finally get you know, Gambit, but where's our Rogue? They didn't announce Anna Paquin.
And no Rogue.
So I was like, just the time. I mean, and she's at the perfect age. I believe she's a little bit older than him, but I think that she still has kind of, she's maintained her youth. So I would love to see that, to, you know, them together, you know. And
I would love to see that. Maybe you get some Brie Larson action in there. Maybe
interesting. Do you think they'll do that?
I mean, I think you have to. You want to separate this Rogue from the Fox one, right?
Yeah.
This is how you do it. You know, she takes freaking, you know, during the fight or something, she touches like Captain Marvel and absorbs her powers.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, and now unless they're casting a younger Rogue or a different Rogue, that might be something that they're doing. Since it sounds like they are merging universes a little bit, like we're getting ready to have their crisis. And again, I'm throwing quotes in the air, and Jeff knows what we mean when DC is known to do it. I was having a talk with somebody at work about this. And she's like, they just can't like reset everything. And I'm like, have you not read a comic book? They do it like every 10 years. Marvel's done it. DC's done it. DC's gotten a little carried away with it. I was like, no, they do the, they recon everything, refresh and start from, I'm waiting for them to do that in MCU. You know, they haven't done it. DC's doing it, but they're not doing it officially. You know, they're just sort of going, hey, we're done with that cast. We're just going to start a whole new movie thing.
Yeah.
You know?
At least Marvel,
they might get away with it and do it smoothly. And I'd love to see if they can do it.
I think they're going to do it. I think this is the two movies to do it with. Mm-hmm. Like you said it best. They're bringing everybody back from that Fox universe. Okay, that universe did exist, but it was somewhere else. Now we're going to actually end everything, and then we're going to bring our X-Men, the Mutant Saga is going to be the next one, which I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to focus on all mutants because the X-Men alone, you're talking about storylines. You could just do X-Men. You don't even have to bring like the Avengers in. Maybe you could sprinkle a couple of them here or there, but like, You literally, like, that's the next 10 years for the MCU is the X. That's it.
Between them I will eventually have to eat my words. I know I will. But Fantastic Four. I mean, Fantastic Four is starting to, like, look like a great movie. And if anybody's heard me in the past.
That's going to be a tall order. Everything I've seen, I like.
Yeah.
Which is kind of scares me because I have never been a Fantastic Four fan. I know of them. The books were better. My brother, older buddy, is a huge Fantastic Four fan. I told him, I was like, look, opening night, we're going to go see it. Because if you like it, then I have faith. Because he's hated the Fantastic Four, the movies, every single one of them. He couldn't even watch it so bad.
I just don't think that translate great over, but maybe it will. I mean, the casting, the fact that they're breaking the mold. And, I would have loved to see John Krasinski as you know, Steve. But I think Pedro's outside of the realm. Like somebody even mentioned that I've got a little group at work. We talk and somebody made that comment. They're like, I just don't see him as, you know, Mr. Fan. I was like, yeah, but that might be what helps him, that he's not what we would expect.
Yeah. Cause Krasinski's a guy you could look at like, that's what we wanted.
And we saw it. I was like, that's, and honestly, I got a funny feeling he's going to be back. I think the original cast is going to be back from the 90s Fantastic Four, because I swear to God, again, it might have been a Mandela effect on me, but I swear to God, I thought I saw a trailer, like one of the trailers that got released for Fantastic Four literally showed new clips of the old 90s and John. And in clips I haven't seen. So I'm like, did I imagine that, or was it just wishful thinking again?
I don't know. I mean, maybe you could be right, or maybe it could be wishful thinking.
Yeah.
But, I'm hoping. I mean, they got Galactus in it. I mean, they look like at least he's not a purple cloud, so that's an improvement.
Getting Silver Surfer's coming in it as well.
In there. A different one. It's not Norman Rad. It's somebody else. I don't know who Red Ghost is. That's a deep cut Fantastic Four, but that's like before my time. I would have to ask my brother about that. Apparently, John Malkovich, he's going to play Red Ghost. But I want to see it. I like the whole 60s vibe, the new futuristic thing, kind of like Tomorrowland. If you're a big fan of that movie, Tomorrowland, like very 60s, like kind of like Jetsons. So, but I hope. I hope. And you got Thunderbolts and that coming. Oh, so
Thunderbolts, I can't wait.
Thunderbolts, man. It's just, I'm getting excited. Mm-hmm. I haven't been excited for an MCU movie in a long time.
Deadpool and Wolverine, I was not that. I wasn't this excited.
I liked that Deadpool Wolverine.
Oh, I did, but my excitement level for
Thunderbolt,
much higher than it was for Deadpool
Wolverine. I have not been excited for like a movie like this for a long time. Like, and just doing the Sentry, man. We talk off here about the Sentry. Like, come on, cut that alone. Like, I want to see that, the freaking yellow suit, the giant S buckle, turning people to shadows. Come on, May.
I'm surprised they showed that much of it in the trailer, honestly. I thought that they were going to hold back like they had been, where he was just this meek-looking person, you know, in the original trailers they had. But, yeah, now they're just like, hey, this is happening. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, we're not keeping that a secret anymore, are we?
No. I guess they're like, yeah, fuck it. We can't hide it. Yeah. Who the Thunderbolt's going to fight anyway? All right, what you got? Am I next?
Oh no, I'm done. That's our okay. That's our list there. But I did mine. Yeah, no, I just did. I guess you have one more. Yeah,
I got one more, and this is an easy one. That's why I held the best for last. Redemption came for this guy. He was never really out of the spotlight, but he kind of went through like a lull for a while after the Golden Age. And Frank Miller took a stab at it. He's like, I'll do it, and we get The Dark Knight Returns. Part one, part two. If you read the books, they are great. They're legendary books at this point.
So wasn't there part three as well?
Yeah, it was. Ugh, it was not great. It was a part four, too, like The Dark Knight Returns or Strikes Back. Awful. Well, they made Plastic Man, I think, in part three. Made him to like a really deadly serious character. I'm not sure if you read part three.
Yeah,
that's the only good thing about
that's
it.
That's why I was like, I thought there was a part three. I could have sworn.
Yeah, there's a part three. And, Plastic Man has a part to play. And he's very villainous, which I kind of like. Couple lines if you haven't checked it out, but basically he brought Batman back into the lexicon, and basically since that Frank Miller run, every kind of creator who has done their adaptation of Batman has kind of like taken that form and used it in almost every medium. It's like animated, live action. They just borrowed that certain, like, not the whole things, but like some of the things from that comic. They borrow, like, every iteration of Batman since then has like taken pieces of that. So I kind of like modernized him, toughened up a little bit, and he became what he became after that. You know, that, like, just like, you know, Superman, The Death of Superman Returns, this comic is right up there along with those. So it a lot of imagery in this comic as well. You know, the return, his fight with Superman, the return of the Joker.
Like literary classes in college about that book and, you know, the symbolisms and the meanings behind everything. Not just directors or DC people, but just like even like directors, Kevin Smith will quote every day that's the book that brought him into comic books. You know, that he read that. You know, I've heard so many people, like I've heard teachers using it in like public schools at like creative writing or reading classes. You know, I had a contemporary lit class in high school, and we read like Vonnegut and Michener, and she brought in that, and, you know, said, hey, check this out. It opened up the world to a fresher version of Batman. But I think in the last decade, it's kind of gotten worn thin. I'm still a big Batman fan. I just think that usage is kind of getting there, you know. It's getting worn out.
I can see that. And they have been using that for a long time. Since that period, they haven't really changed them since then. Like,
there have been other great Batmans out there in the last 20 years, you know? I mean, it's 20, 30 years, actually. You go back to the 90s. You know, there's been a lot of great Batman books and Batman characters, not to have to be that dark and brooding character. I know you don't like it. Well, I think you don't like it. I can't say that. We have opinions about certain characters in the comic book, but the Batman to me was a fresh take, because he wasn't the overly brooding character. You saw the balance of Bruce and Batman in that, you know, in that cartoon run. But I absolutely love that cartoon run. I just put it on in the background. Same thing with the Batman original, you know, the animated one. That one, me and Buddy, a friend of mine, Chris, we'd get home from high school, and bam, we'd make sure we get back to his house so we can watch, you know, watch that Bat. You know, we watch Batman. But yeah, like I said, the Batman was, I think, was a fresh take on it as well. Yeah, they kind of like stepped out a little bit because it wasn't as dark and brooding.
I mean,
Batman can't be dark and brooding all the time. He's surrounded by fucking kids, all right? Yeah, you can't be that grumpy.
That's going to be the trick for Gunn going into the future is how do you do that? How do you make a fresh approach to Batman while still keeping him as Batman?
They're instantly softening him up by giving him a Robin from
family.
Day one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
day one, yeah.
Making him a dad right away. Mm. The Bat family's around. So I'm going to be interested to see if they're going to make that balance because – that hasn't really been done yet. I mean, it's been done in like other universes. Like we saw one of our favorite shows, Titans. They showed more of the lineage of the Robins.
Yep.
But only thing that was missing was the relationship with Batman, which was sort of there, but it wasn't really there. You know what I mean?
It
was more
because it was Titans. They wanted to focus more on the Robins.
Of course.
Yeah. And I like that part of it. Their growth and.
I like the Bruce and Dick stuff a lot more, though,
when you got it, yeah.
When they're just sitting down in the library, I think the first time they're, like, talking, and you could see, like, it's like a respect thing. Like, that's his dad, and it's like, this is the first kid I trained, and they could talk like that.
Yeah, and that's what I'd like to see going forward is, like, that relationship.
Yeah.
Because, again, we obviously are going to have that. I think, didn't they say Red Hood's going to – because, yeah, they were going to do a Nightwing and Red Hood movie, weren't they?
Or Robin, which I'm all on board for that.
Nightwing, I'm right there.
Show more Red Hood too. He's like one of those least guys that has been. He's another guy that I could have brought back that literally was brought back from the dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
talk about a rebirth. You know, freaking Jason Todd, Robin to freaking Red Hood, anti-hero. There's one. There's another one I just threw on there before we left.
Look at that. The cherry on top. You're always good.
The cherry on top was the Red Hood. I just borrowed that.
All right, guys. So, we're back. We've finished the first month in April. Woo-hoo! April, we're going to do a sort of a revisit. Before we took a break, Jeff and I were running. We're doing a or before I took a break. Let me apologize here. Before I took the break, we were doing horror movies. So we were doing the Year of Fear. On one of our other podcasts, and we thought it'd be fun to jump in and do some horror movie things. So we're going to talk about our favorite slasher, our favorite movies, even we're going to delve into the horror comics as well.
Yeah, the horror comics one is going to be really fun because there's a lot of fun horror comics out there because they way back.
Yeah.
The fun one to go.
So make sure you guys do check that out. Again, we are on Facebook. And so if you guys have any comments, suggestions, you want to make fun of us for whatever reason, bring it on. We absolutely welcome it.
And, absolutely.
So we will see you guys next time.
See ya.